So this morning is January 26, and it is 2019. It's Narkey Street Congregation, and we are in Deuteronomy 3, verse 23 to 4:24, and the Haftarah is Isaiah 33, verse 2, and the following verses. And we've just read those verses, and in Isaiah we read up till verse 16, Isaiah 33, 16. So, let's start off by asking, what did we notice in these readings here? For those who haven't been here, or you're listening for the first time, we are looking at this ancient parashah tradition that is not the one that's done today in the synagogues, but it goes back earlier here into the land. And we're looking for connections between the Torah, the first five books of Moses, and the prophetic readings that were associated with it. So we are looking for connections, whether it's ideas, words, any of that stuff. I mean, let's first start and just examine Deuteronomy, what we read in Deuteronomy. What is Deuteronomy 3:23 talking about? Who's speaking here?
Moses.
Okay, so in Deuteronomy, we have Moses talking, and he's talking in first person, where he says, and I. And this is not normal. If you go and you read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, it's usually third person, and God did this, and Abraham did this. But in Deuteronomy, it's often, and I said this, where Moses is talking, first person. And he's talking about going into the good land, but he's not going to go into the good land, right? Who is?
Joshua.
Who was his right-hand man. And Sheila, you pointed out that whereas in Deuteronomy it talks about good land, and Isaiah it's talking more about things are not good. Disaster. Okay. What else in Deuteronomy 3? What does Moses say about God, and what does he say about the people, and
what
does God command? And what struck you?
What struck me was that God has given the land, they're to go in and possess the land they've given, and if there's a connection with Isaiah, it's basically how they've turned their back on what God has said.
Right. Which is what? What did they turn the back on?
That he is the only God.
What does Deuteronomy say you need to do to inherit the land?
Say one more time. Not add a word to what I command you. Keep his commandments.
Keep his commandments. That's simply obey. Obey commandments. Obey his commandments. What does in Deuteronomy 4 Moses describes? How does he describe those commandments? In verse 4, let's see.
Statutes and judgments.
Verse 13. First off, he calls it a covenant.
Yeah.
A brit. Okay? And he also calls it the Ten Commandments. The Ten Words. That's in verse 13. So now this makes you think of what when you say Ten Commandments? Right, but what story are you thinking about?
Going up to Sinai, right?
Sinai and Horeb, right? And what happened? What happened there?
Well, because he was up there a long time, when he came down the first time, there was a golden calf they were worshipping.
Okay, so they were worshipping the golden calf, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
When he went up first time.
But how was the environment that it's being described as? Sinai, what's going on in the atmosphere?
The
there was thunder and struck whatever. Today's parasha downstairs is all about the thunder and the lightning. And
okay,
the,
so,
the
so there's thunder
God's
and
presence.
There's lightning, and what is Deuteronomy saying there is as well? What's fire, right?
It's darkness, cloud.
There's clouds. There's smoke. There's
fire.
So it's very it's very ominous.
Very frightening in some ways.
Very frightening. Okay. So anything else that we missed in Deuteronomy?
Very interesting that you just pointed out the fire in the giving of the Ten Commandments, and then at the very end of the section, our God is a consuming fire.
Yeah.
Yes. So we'll finish with that. Look at verse 15, Deuteronomy 4:15, which is what kind of Brenda brought up with the golden calf here, is there's this section here about idolatry.
Yeah.
Of do not become corrupt and make for yourselves, because the Lord spoke out of the fire, it says, right? God speaks from the fire. And God speaks from the fire. He says, don't make yourselves an idol, an image or shape, whether formed like a man or a woman, zachav and nekeva, or like any animal on earth, or any bird that flies in the air. By the way, that's a Hebraism when you say a bird that flies. In English, we don't say the bird that flies because we know a bird flies. It's redundancy. And then it says in verse 18, or any fish in the waters. Again, in English, you don't say the fish in the waters because a fish is in the water. It would be dead if it wasn't in the water. Except for maybe a catfish for a few days. And so, what does that remind you of? What story? Bird of the air, fish of the seas, creation, man and woman, male and female, Genesis chapter 1. And then go to verse 19, and when you look up to the sky and you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, what's that remind you of? Creation as well. Except there, in the creation story, it doesn't say the sun and the moon, it says the big light and the little light. But it does say the kochavim, so the stars. So this little section right here is very much talking about God is the creator. He created all of us. He created this animals and nature and everything we see. But this section of Deuteronomy is taking that and saying this is what we don't want to become God and make things to worship. Like there's something interesting here with the creation and saying this is like an anti-creation when we make stuff to worship. Anyways, verse 20 is important, I think. Deuteronomy 4:20. The Lord took you and brought you out of the iron smelting furnace out of Egypt. And so going along with this idea of fire.
Yes, smelting.
Going on this idea of fire. We've got this smelting furnace. It's a specific word here. And it's for whenever you want to do stuff with metals. You want to melt and you want to make whatever it is you make with metals. Whether it's jewelry or idols or weapons or... I'm not an expert in it, but it's specifically for that.
Smelting.
And we're going to look at that in one second. And that kind of plays into this. It's connected with this fire imagery and also with this golden calf imagery. Because when Moses came down to Aaron and the people and they're all dancing and worshiping the golden calf and all this, and Moses says, why'd you do this, Aaron? What happened? What did Aaron say?
He melted what they brought them and the calf had just suddenly appeared.
And where did how did it appear though?
Out of the fire.
It says he jumped out of the fire. It came out of the fire.
Right.
So it's also interesting that idols come out of fire as well. Going back to that same idea, God creates this creation and man creates the this creation, and you know, God's made us to be creators. He's made us to make things. But the difference is do we worship our creation or do we worship the Creator? That's kind of where I see the difference in the Bible. So there's going to be a big theme here with fire as we go on. Yes.
From the time of the creation, out of the melting furnace.
The who? God?
No.
Yeah. Right. I'm just talking about this one. These verses.
Yeah.
Just there.
It means that here means the powerful mighty of the God, or the kind of, you know, the result of the refusing to accept the God's command.
Right. Well, that's the other thing too, is idols might come out of fire, but if you always go and you look at the prophets, as the idols are being collected in the land, whenever people repent, they throw the idols back into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about them going back, they're thrown into the fire, they're going to be burned up. So, and again, it's not just like we're destroying them, but metal is useful and you can reuse it for good things or for bad things.
The key is what you said for Mr. Wong, mm-hmm. which is either you worship the Creator, mm-hmm. God Himself, or you worship the things that you have created.
Because God in the beginning created everything. Yeah. And it's from those things that then people have tried to create things that they worship. Because things wouldn't be there if God hadn't created.
And we still worship things we create.
Yeah. God said, don't do it. That's not my
internet.
Okay, it's true. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
A question regarding verse 19, because I don't know what it sounds in your translation, in my German translation, so that it sounds like this, the last part of the sentence, the moon and the stars and all the, that is in heavens or so, you shall not bow down before them, because like God has, this is the portion that God has given to the nations.
Right.
What is it's quite strange.
Yes.
It's like God says, that's not for you, it's for the nations. They should bow down before it.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
that's a good point.
It's like an intention that God gave.
Right. Yeah. It's it definitely comes across as Israel is special. Israel will worship not these idols, but the nations might do it, but Israel is not going to do it. So you're right. It does kind of come across as, you know, on one hand you could be like, well, they're supposed to worship.
They
can do it, but you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is. I also noticed that as well. And it's kind of like in these first books, like Leviticus especially, when they talk about what you can eat and what you cannot eat, children of Israel, it's also a similar thing, because by what you eat, you separate yourself from the nations. And so in the same way, what you worship or who you worship, it's part of your identity. So
because what comes out all the time in this section, but all the way through, is that I, the Lord, am creating a nation, a special nation.
Right.
There's no other nation with this God.
He says that at Sinai.
And
yeah.
Yes, and he says it even again. What great nation is there that has so God near to it? This is 4:7. And then again, it says people for inheritance. So this nation, I think we have to get into our heads in all sorts of levels, but it's really important to understand that God created a nation who have a God, who have food habits, who have this and who have that and all the rest of it, which makes them special. You could say the Italians are special because they all eat spaghetti. I mean, and if you want to join Italy, you'll end up eating spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
Or China, you'll eat rice. And I mean, in a little bit the same way, on a deeper level, Israel has her own God, and then you come on and the Gentiles who come in to understand who Yeshua is, who is the son of that God, basically join in and get rooted back into that nation.
So,
this idea of all the time of nation and inheritance, which I think is so crucial.
Right. So on one hand, this is an earlier foundation for Israel's faith, right? But then if you go into Acts, like in the New Testament, and it talks about, you know, the first church, they're all Jews, but they start to see these nations, these Gentiles, come want to follow Yeshua, Jesus, and, you know, well, what do they need to be circumcised? And so there's this council here in Jerusalem, and what are the four things that they're supposed to not do if they want to not convert to Judaism but still follow the Jewish Messiah?
Right.
What are they? Right. So sexual morality, idolatry. So this issue right here about the Gentiles, you can worship your idols because you're just over there. Whereas in Jesus, they're saying, no, the idolatry is finished. It's no longer for the nations. It's, you know, it's time to move past all of that. So it's an interesting question.
Progressive revelation.
Right. However you want to come up with.
And it's very interesting, because for the very, very beginning, you shall not add a word to the I command you, and the very, very end of the Bible, the end of Revelation, says exactly the same. You're not to end or take away. It's exactly the same verse, in fact.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, that's a good question. We'll save that for another time, because there's a lot to think about there. Isaiah 33, real quick. Turn there. We just read that. What are some things in Isaiah 33 that stand out to you that we read, starting in verse 2 to 16? Especially in relation to what we're doing with Deuteronomy.
Is it, O Lord, be gracious to us in spite of our sin?
Well, what about it, or what?
Well, the connection. I mean, this is written.
What do you have in spite of our sin?
It doesn't say in spite of our sin. I'm saying, it starts off, O Lord, be gracious to us. We've waited for you.
Okay.
Our salvation is also in time of trouble. And so.
Question is, what are we talking about here? What is this time of trouble? Who is it related to? What's the context?
It's related to them, isn't it?
Well, who's them?
The people of Israel.
Okay, but who are the people of Israel at this point?
I think they're in Babylon. Are they?
No.
Woe to you.
Verse 5.
The Lord is
filled Zion who's just...
Okay, what is Zion?
Jerusalem.
Okay, so we're talking about Jerusalem here. We're talking about Jerusalem. We're talking about, this is when the kingdom has been split. There's the northern tribes, and then there's Judah. So Israel, Judah. We're talking about Judah. We're talking about Jerusalem. Disaster. Things are not going so well, right?
Yeah.
Which Sheila pointed out. Any other things that connect you to what we've just read in Deuteronomy?
Well, it does say the fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. So it's like obedience, again, is the key to, I was going to say, have a good life, but that's a bit... But the fear of the Lord, which is obedience, is at the bottom of things going well. I don't know quite how to put it.
Good. Is there one image that stands out to you here in Isaiah 33?
A tree?
A treaty.
Great. So the brit, there is a treaty. Another word for covenant is treaty. It's the same word in Hebrew.
Where?
Nikon,
how did you see it? I mean, I'm sure you're right, but where is it?
It's in verse 8.
Verse 8. Isaiah 33:8.
Okay. Oh, he's broken the covenant.
The treaty is broken.
Yeah, he's broken the covenant. So the bridge has been broken.
Good, Nicole. What else? There's one overpowering image that comes straight from Deuteronomy that we just read.
Which you see with
the thunder of your voice.
Verse 11, verse 12.
the fire again.
Fire.
Your breath is fire. And the people should be like the burning of lime, like thorns.
Go to verse 14.
Consuming fire.
Consuming fire, the fire that eats. This is that thing that we just read at the end of Deuteronomy, right? Our God is a consuming, or your God is a consuming fire. So, I want to hand this out, and there's only 15, so just kind of, let's see how they go along. So this is what I want to do to kind of tie it all up this morning, to bring us into focus. What are the big connections besides what we, the fire, I think, is the image for these passages, the big link. But let's start in the very first verses of Isaiah 33:2 and Deuteronomy 3:23. There is a word connection that ties those two verses. Your very first, right? You got two columns.
Great. The treaty is broken.
And the very first verse.
At the time I pleaded, no.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
Pleaded, and then you're, is it? And then you're saying, be gracious to us. We long for
yes.
you. Long and pleaded. Would those two words?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Is that what you
mean? Yes. Yes. Deuteronomy 3:23 has Et Hanan. I pleaded.
Yeah.
It's a heat pael. The root is het nun nun. Het nun nun. In Deuteronomy, it's a heat pael. I pleaded. In Isaiah 33, all of you language experts out there, please correct me if I get anything wrong. In Isaiah 33:2, Adonai Honenu. Lord, be merciful to us. So it's the same root for, in Deuteronomy, it's I pleaded, like have mercy. And then Isaiah 33 is, you know, Lord, have mercy. So then let me just put that here. At the same root.
So in the Isaiah, we've got Lord, be gracious to us, we long for you. Is it which is the word we're talking about? The word for gracious or the word we long for?
Gracious.
Gracious,
be gracious.
Right.
Okay. The next thing is in Deuteronomy 3, the very first word, Deuteronomy 3:23, is at that time. In the English, the first word. At that time. You go to Isaiah 33:2.
Every morning, maybe.
What time is it? Isaiah 33:2.
Every morning.
Every morning. Well, or our salvation in time of distress. It can be, if in time of distress, can be morning, noon, or night.
So the word in Hebrew is et, and
yeah.
In Deuteronomy 3:23. You know, he says at that time, it's just, he's just talking at that time, so and so happened or whatever. But it's curious because whoever connected, who wove these passages together in Isaiah, it says, but at tzaka, you know, at a time of distress. So there's this word link again of time. It's in that same verse that opens both of these passages. It's a time of distress here. And Moses says at that time. Going back to Deuteronomy 3, let's this time go to the next verse, 24. Sovereign Lord, you have begun to show to your servant your greatness and your what?
Strong hand, which is strength, which you're going back to when they say, be our strength every morning.
Right. Well, the question is this. The word in Hebrew there for your strong hand is yad. Right? We know this word.
Yeah.
Go to Isaiah 33, verse 2. strength, which Brenda just pointed out, is what is it in the Hebrew? Zoah. Which is your arm. It's. I mean, Yad and Zoah, they're basically synonyms. So it's an idiom of strength in both cases. And so again, it's curious. It's not the exact words, but they are part of the same body part. So the word for strength here in Isaiah 33:2 is actually his arm. It's arm. And then it connects up to hand over there. Okay, so who
in Deuteronomy, who is Moses trying to talk to the people about? What's he? He's saying, look, Israel, you're not like those guys. Who's he talking about? I mean, we already just discussed this a few minutes ago. The nations. The Gentiles. The right?
And what happens in Isaiah 33? In verse 3.
When the peoples flee when there's an army, but when they rise up, the other people scatter. So I'm not quite sure. But the uproar of your army, the peoples flee. So is it the uproar of God's army, the peoples flee?
Or it's they flee in the face of God, God's power, his arm. But in both cases, we're talking here about nations.
Yeah.
There's this idea of nations, and Joshua takes the people into the land to fight the nations, to clear out the nations that are they're living there. And so again, there's another kind of connection I see there with nations. Now let's come down to Deuteronomy 4, verse 6. You can see it on the paper. 4, verse 6. Observe them carefully, for this will show your wisdom and understanding to the nations.
And the nations in the Hebrew, I've got in front of me, is goyim, presumably, every time.
Yes.
And then when it says
actually,
in Hebrew, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.
Actually, it's Amim. It's
the first time or the second time?
In verse 6, it talks about Amim in the eyes of the Amim. And then it kind of goes between Amim and...
And then when it says, surely this great nation, presumably it's referring to Israel, is a wise and understanding people or not?
Which verse?
Verse 6, Phil. You've got the word nations twice in your copy sheet.
Yeah. Well, actually there it says you're a goy, hagoy hagadol, talking about Israel.
Israel is a goy hagadol, right.
Yeah, right there in verse 6. In Isaiah 33, verse 3, when it talks about the peoples flee, it's Amim. And then it talks about the nations there. It's talking about goyim. But as we all know, Am and Goy are their synonyms.
Yeah.
So, okay, Deuteronomy 4:6. Observe them carefully. Observe means do, right? The commandments, the teachings. This will show your wisdom and understanding to the nations, who will hear about these decrees and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. What's the word that's being repeated here? Or the two words? Wise and understanding, right? And if you look over to the Isaiah 33 column, verse 6, Isaiah 33, verse 6, what's it say?
Sure foundation for your times. I think you mean 5. Justice and righteousness.
No, 6.
Wisdom and knowledge and salvation.
Yeah,
wisdom and understanding. Yeah, it says wisdom and knowledge and salvation.
Yes.
So I presume understanding. understanding, you could say, is knowledge.
So there you have wisdom being carried over.
Yeah.
And also I want to find here in my translation, there's also fear of the Lord in Deuteronomy. And I'm where is it? Sorry. Okay. So the translation here doesn't. Hold on. Let me just. I got it right here. Deuteronomy 4:10. And the problem is I deleted it off the page. Okay, Deuteronomy 4:10, if you look in your Bibles.
I will let them hear my words that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth.
Yes. So here you have the fear of the Lord. Deuteronomy 4:10 with Isaiah 33:6. Does everybody see that? Deuteronomy 4:10 and Isaiah 33:6. Does everybody see that? Fear of the Lord? Right, revere, but in the Hebrew it's yare, and same word. Fear the Lord means to revere him, right? If in English it's another way we say it. So what does wisdom, what does wise, what does knowledge, what does understanding, what does fear of the Lord make us think of in the Bible? All of those concepts. What book in the Bible?
Proverbs.
Proverbs.
Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Proverbs says in chapter 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we're going to see as we read through Deuteronomy over the next 30 weeks that this concept of wisdom and fear of the Lord is going to keep reoccurring. And we'll talk more about that, what that means. But we think of wisdom literature. But here in Isaiah 33, you've got that same concept of wisdom and knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And it's treasure. So like we're going through this series now with the sermons at Narcisse on the parables of Jesus, and in a week or two we're going to have one on the parable of the hidden treasure. And to me, you know, what is the hidden treasure?
You're doing it.
No, I'm not doing it. I think it might be Claire, but. You know, what is this hidden treasure that's buried in the ground that this guy goes and buys, sells all of his whatever to buy it, or that's the pearl, but it's very similar. It's the word, it's the wisdom, it's the Lord's teachings, and they're so valuable.
I always thought it's the gospel.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's the...
What'd you say?
The gospel.
I always thought it's the gospel. The good news.
Right. But
that's how we repackage it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? The word.
I mean,
the gospel. Yeah.
The gospel is something you hear,
yeah.
And it's something you need to do.
It is.
And but it's foundation. Its foundation though is it's the word of the Lord. The word of the Lord. And because it brings all of these benefits, and I mean not that you're doing it to receive benefits, but it's good for you. It's like taking vitamins or eating healthy or whatever. And so this idea of wisdom being a treasure, and in the, you know, in Jesus' parable, it's even buried. You've got to dig it up. You can't just, you know, you can't just pick it from the tree.
Danny's phrase just now, what was it?
How we repackage it?
Yeah, well, that's right. That was really true. But I was thinking of something a few minutes ago when you talked about it wasn't the word developmental, but
progressive.
progressive revelation you talked about. And so often we get to the end of the story. It can be the Gospels, it can be the New Testament, whatever. But we haven't really read the beginning and made sense of where it's coming from.
Right. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, everybody sees the connection here between the Isaiah passage and the Deuteronomy passage, talking about wisdom, and that God's word, his teaching, his commandments are, they're good for us and they're wisdom. And now let's finish it, flip the page over on the backside. Let's finish it with this overpowering image of fire that we've noticed in both sections. Right. So if you want to take your pencil and circle here the parallel parts. For
11, while it blazes with fire.
Actually, it's in both verses 11. Deuteronomy verse 11 and Isaiah verse 11. They both start off with fire there. That's easy to find. You came near and stood at the foot of the mountain while it blazed with fire to the very heavens with black clouds and deep darkness. Isaiah 33, verse 11, you conceive chaff, you give birth to straw, your breath is a fire that consumes you. Here it's a little confusing, but who we're talking about exactly here, about the people, that fire is coming out to burn them, I guess, maybe. Verse 12, the peoples will be burned to ashes like cut thorn bushes. They will be set ablaze.
But it's both, isn't it? Because it's we, the people, will get burnt up by the fire. But it's also God speaking out of the fire. He himself is the consuming fire. So you've got these, if you like, two fires.
And that's how we met Moses. Or Moses met God, wasn't it? He was drawn by the burning bush, again, the fire.
Right.
But there the fire did not consume.
So,
but again, it got his attention.
Yeah, but stay with it, because the burning bush is God speaking.
Yeah.
So the burning bush is God himself. God says, I am a consuming fire. I am a jealous God. He's not burning you up.
No. But it didn't burn. No, he didn't.
And it didn't burn out the bush.
Well, here's what you're trying to say is this. Look in verse 14, Isaiah 33:14. Who of us can dwell with consuming fire? Right? No, none of us. If we're in a house that's burning down, we burn up because we're made of flesh. But this writer here is asking the question: who can dwell with fire? Who can dwell with everlasting burning fire? Which is obviously talking about God. How can anyone stand in the holiness of God and not be consumed?
Right.
It's kind of like what Isaiah in chapter 6, where he came in and he said, take the coals and
burn,
right? That idea. And then he gives the answer, verse 15. Who will not be consumed by the fire of having the Lord in them are these people, those who walk righteously. Verse 15.
In other words, who keep the Ten Commandments.
Who speak what is right, who reject gain from extortion, who
right.
keep their hands from accepting bribes, who stop their ears against plots of murder, and shut their eyes against contemplating evil. They are the ones who will dwell in the heights, whose refuge will be the mountain fortress. Their bread will be supplied, and water will not fail them.
You know what's beautiful about this is that it doesn't say it's these people who do these amazing, wonderful things. All they need to do is...
They're not charismatic people.
They're not charismatic people. They're not. They don't run an orphanage. They don't. They haven't fed thousands of poor people. They haven't. Of course, it's not to deny that those things
right.
are good. But all this person does is someone offers a bribe, and he just says no.
No.
Someone. Plots murder, and he just walks away. He just, just keep yourself away from this stuff. Just keep yourself,
We'll have the guts to say no.
Yeah.
Just like fearing the Lord and obeying his commands.
Yeah. It's almost like basic decency. Like,
probably it's really a warning to people in power, but you know, like to kings and things like that. But like, you know, if you're a king, you know, really, you know, just maintain that baseline of justice and not being corrupted.
So I want to look. It's excellent. That's exact. I totally agree. Because the time's running out, I want to just close with two passages to finish. First is about this fire. God consumes or God burns. What is God actually burning if he's a fire? How is that metaphor used sometimes in the Bible? What does the fire do to us? Purifies. And if you look in verse 20 of Deuteronomy 4, it says, "The Lord brought you out of the iron smelting furnace out of Egypt." And this is used a few times in the Bible as a metaphor that Egypt was this place to purify you and get you ready to bring you into the land. I want to look at Ezekiel 22. This is the first passage to close. Ezekiel 22, and I'm just going to kind of, Ezekiel 22, it's after Isaiah, it's after Jeremiah. It's the third prophet in the English, or translated English Greek Bibles. Ezekiel 22. Remember, Ezekiel is living in Babylon, but he's writing back, communicating to the people in Jerusalem.
Of 17, the son of house of Israel becomes lost to me.
Okay, but yeah, before we get there, Ezekiel 22, the word of the Lord came to me. Verse 1. Son of man, will you judge her? Will you judge this city of bloodshed? Confront her with all her detestable practices. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Verse 3. You city that brings on herself doom by shedding blood in her midst and defiles herself by making idols. You have become guilty because of the blood you have shed and have become defiled by the idols you have made. It says you've made yourself a scorn to the nations, a laughing stock to the peoples.
Sorry, what chapter? Sorry.
22. Now look at verse 6. See how each of the princes, this is kind of what Danny was saying about those in leadership or power. See how each of the princes of Israel who are in you uses his power to shed blood. In you they have treated father and mother with contempt. What is that going against? Father and mother?
Not honoring your father.
It's the fourth commandment, right?
Yeah.
Ten commandment. They've oppressed the foreigner and mistreated the fatherless, the orphan, and the widow. You've despised my holy things and desecrated my Shabbats. That's also in the commandments. You are slanderers who are bent on shedding blood. In you are those who eat at the mountain shrines and commit lewd acts. In you are those who dishonor their father's bed. You who violate women during their period when they are ceremonially unclean. You're doing things with your neighbor's wife. That's also in the Ten Commandments. A lot of this is in the Ten Commandments. You're accepting bribes to shed blood. That's in verse 12. You take interest and make a profit from the poor. On and on. Okay, so here's what I'm getting to here. That's the context. Go to verse 17. Then the word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, the people of Israel have become dross to me. Dross is the bad stuff that's connected to metal that needs to be purified or cleaned off to get the metal strong. All of the people are the copper, the tin, the iron, and the lead that is left inside a furnace. They are but the dross of silver. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says, because you have all become dross, I will gather you into Jerusalem as silver, copper, iron, lead, and tin are gathered into a furnace to be melted with a fiery blast. So will I gather you in my anger and my wrath and put you inside the city and melt you. I will gather you and I will blow on you with my fiery wrath and you will be melted inside her. As silver is melted in a furnace, the word here for furnace is kor. This is the same word that we're talking about back here in Deuteronomy 4, verse 20. This furnace Jerusalem is the furnace. It's the place where they're being melted or smelted. And what's all the stuff that makes their metal weak and bad? All of the sin, right? All of these acts of terrible things that they're allowing to happen. And the Lord is going to pour out his wrath on them.
The sin is the fuel of the furnace, in effect.
Well, I don't know scientifically,
no.
but it sounds nice. And then finally, let's close with Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews is at the end of the Bible. And let's start in verse 18. Hebrews 12.
It's in the New Testament.
Hebrews 12, verse 18. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched and that is burning with fire, to darkness, gloom, and storm, to a trumpet blast, or to such a voice speaking words, that those who heard it begged that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded. If even an animal touches the mountain, it must be stoned to death. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, "I am trembling with fear." But you have come to Mount Zion. So this is interesting. If you think back to Isaiah 33, we're talking about Zion in Isaiah 33. You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all. And if you remember back in Isaiah 33, it talked about God being judge as well later on. But anyways, you've come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. So Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and his sprinkled blood speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. Verse 25, this is where we finish. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. What is that? I mean, makes me think of right now, the voice that was speaking, but it was speaking without a form. Remember Deuteronomy 4:12. Then the Lord spoke to you out of the fire. You heard the sound of the words, but saw no form. There was only a voice. So back here in Hebrews 12, verse 25, see to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? Verse 26. At that time, his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, once more, I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. The words, once more, indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful, and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe.
For our God is a consuming fire.
I've
just got a question there, because in the Deuteronomy, it's very clear that this voice, this speaks God himself, who had no form, with all the drama of what was going on. And now we're saying, we've heard this voice again, and we're not to refuse him. But it's not actually using the name of Yeshua, it's not implying that we've actually seen this voice. Or is it implying that?
Well, it says the blood of Jesus speaks better than the blood of Abel. So
it is
talking implicitly about Jesus. But basically, for a conclusion, we have again this image of God is a fire that eats. It's a fire that consumes, and the purpose is to purify, and I think it's pretty simple, yet pretty hard to live with fire in your house, right? Because it can burn you when it's purifying, so it's not easy. Any other closing comments or observations?
So, this reminds me of the parable of the soils. Because again, when the word of the Lord goes out, and do not refuse it. Don't ignore it. Like, if it comes to you, you can take the soil or
do something. Shabbat shalom.